So well, the session is Zika, the bite beyond the tropics. So we're going to start in the tropics in Puerto Rico. Yeah, exactly. So Zika virus was first detected in the Americas in May 2015 in Brazil, and the map here shows the 48 countries and territories in the Americas that have reported local transmission since May 2015. The Zika virus is a flavivirus and is transmitted by Aedes aegypti and Aedes albopictus mosquitoes, and it can be sexually transmitted, and reports have estimated a broad range that between 18 and 57% of infections are symptomatic. And those symptoms include, it's usually mild, and include rash, fever, joint pain, muscle pain, conjunctivitis, or headache. So in Puerto Rico, Aedes aegypti mosquitoes also transmit dengue and chikungunya viruses, and infection of these viruses have been shown to be clustered in and around households through investigations. In one of those was in 2014. There was a household cluster investigation of chikungunya virus that were carried out in Puerto Rico. And these investigations showed that 24% of the participants were infected with chikungunya. And with this surveillance pyramid, we can see that not all symptomatic people sought care. And of those that did seek care, only about 9% of those that did were reported to public health authorities. So you can kind of see the pinnacle of the surveillance pyramid of what passive surveillance is picking up. Zika was first detected in Puerto Rico in December 2015, and more than 38,000 laboratory positive cases were reported to public health authorities during 2016. Among all cases in 2016, more than 2,800 pregnant women were reported with Zika virus infection, with the majority of them being symptomatic infections. In 312 Zika virus cases were hospitalized, and 5 deaths occurred associated with Zika infection. So we carried out household-based cluster investigations to estimate the prevalence of Zika virus infection in households around confirmed cases of Zika, and also to identify characteristics that were associated with seeking care, accurate clinical diagnosis, and case reporting of Zika disease. So here we'll talk about the study design. We carried out the cluster investigations during September 17th to October 27th, 2016, just after the peak occurred in Puerto Rico, in 5 municipalities in the San Juan metropolitan area. We recruited a convenient sample of PCR-positive Zika virus cases that had been recently reported to Puerto Rico Department of Health, and we scheduled visits to those homes of the index cases within 30 days of illness onset. Upon visiting that home, we offered participation to all households within 100 meters of the index cases residences. And this map shows here, we made these maps before going out into the field so we could identify the homes within the 100 meters and also follow up and track household participation. Each participant was consented, administered a questionnaire, and blood and urine were collected. The specimens were tested by RT-PCR and ELISA for Zika, dengue, and chikungunya viruses, RNA, and as well as antibodies. So participants were defined as having a current Zika infection if they were positive by RT-PCR. They were defined as having a recent Zika infection if they had a positive anti-Zika virus test and a negative dengue, anti-dengue IgM test. The participants that were positive for both anti-Zika and anti-dengue IgM were defined as having a recent flavivirus infection. Overall, we defined a participant as being Zika positive if they had current or recent Zika infection, or if they were recent flavivirus infections. Lastly, in the abstract that was accepted to CSCE, the preliminary case definition for symptomatic Zika virus infection that we used was self-reported rash, arthralgia, fever, or conjunctivitis. However, after performing a sensitivity analysis with our data, we found that rash or arthralgia was the best performance in terms of sensitivity and specificity. So the results presented here today use rash or arthralgia as the case definition for symptomatic Zika virus infection. To account for clustering in households and the clusters themselves, we used general estimating equations to model associations. We carried out bivariate analyses to evaluate associations between independent variables such as recent illness and associated symptoms with that illness, underlying medical conditions, and individual and household characteristics. These were compared with three outcome measures, which were one, did participants with symptomatic Zika virus infection seek health care? Two, were those that did seek health care clinically diagnosed with Zika? And three, were they reported to public health authorities as suspect Zika cases for testing? We matched cluster investigation participants to the Passive Arboviral Disease Surveillance System, or PADS, by name and date of birth and municipality of residence, as well as sex. Lastly, the index cases were removed from the analysis because they were already known to be Zika positive cases. So we carried out 19 cluster investigations, which had a total of 1,029 structures. There were 106 structures that were determined to either be not houses or vacant. And of the 923 occupied households, no one was home on the day of the study in 477. We offered participation to 446 households, among which 202 declined participation. So this resulted in 244 participating households, and among these households, 183 household members were not home at the time of the study, and we offered participation to 462 participants, or individuals, sorry. 79 of them declined participation, leaving us with 383 participants. However, 4 had missing specimens and 12 were from the index cases, so our final study population was 367 participants. So when we look at the Zika positive rate among this population, the figure, this we'll look at the surveillance pyramid again of those 367 participants. We identified 114, or 31%, of Zika-positive participants. Among those 114 Zika-positive participants, 49, or 43%, reported rash or arthralgia within the last 6 months, so they were considered symptomatic. Among those 49 symptomatic Zika-positive participants, 27 of them, or 55%, sought medical care. And lastly, of those 27 positive participants that sought care, 5, or 19%, were found in the PADS database, so had been reported to the Puerto Rico Department of Health. So now I'll present findings from the bivariate modeling that we did. In the following three tables, I'll present only the factors found to be significantly associated. Otherwise, the tables would have just been unreadable on this slide. So recall that 27 out of 49 symptomatic Zika-infected participants sought care. We see that a significantly higher prevalence of persons with diabetes or heart disease sought care. In addition, persons with more underlying medical conditions were more likely to seek care. Lastly, younger participants sought care more often than older participants. Here we see factors associated with being diagnosed with Zika clinically. They reported that the physician in the clinic diagnosed them with Zika. So we found that 10 of 27 symptomatic Zika-positive participants that sought care reported being clinically diagnosed during their visit. Females, older persons, and persons with more underlying medical conditions were less likely to be diagnosed with Zika, while participants with conjunctivitis or another underlying condition were more likely to be diagnosed with Zika. And when I say other underlying condition, there were all of the underlying conditions listed in the footnote. We asked if they had those. And if they said no to all of those, but said yes, they had other condition, and that was associated with being diagnosed with Zika. So lastly, this slide shows the factors associated with being reported to the Puerto Rico Department of Health or the PADS surveillance system as a suspect Zika case and then being tested for positive for Zika virus infection. Recall that 5 out of 27 of those symptomatic Zika virus infections that participants who sought care were reported to public health authorities. So persons with abdominal pain or an underlying medical condition, other than those listed in the questionnaire, were more likely to be found in the passive surveillance system. So the study had several limitations, as all studies do. First, the selection bias could have taken place in three areas. One, we only did the studies in 5 of 77 Puerto Rico municipalities. Also, females and older persons were more likely to participate compared to the general population of Puerto Rico. And lastly, ill persons may have been more likely to participate. So consequently, the results of this study are not generalizable to all of Puerto Rico. In addition, possible misclassification of Zika virus status could have taken place due to the cross-reactivity of dengue IgM antibody Zika virus. Just about done. And lastly, participants reporting an illness 3 to 6 months ago may have had Zika, but no longer had Zika detectable Zika IgM in their serum. So in conclusion, we found that among participants with symptomatic Zika infection, those that were younger or had multiple underlying medical conditions were more likely to seek care, yet less likely to be diagnosed with Zika. Also, symptomatic Zika-positive participants with conjunctivitis were more likely to be diagnosed with Zika, but we found that few Zika-positive participants reported having conjunctivitis, only 18%. Furthermore, this study found that 43% of Zika-positive participants were symptomatic. And by evaluating healthcare-seeking behaviors and matching cases to passive surveillance database, these findings provide an estimate of the proportion of symptomatic cases that passive surveillance captures in Puerto Rico. We'd like to thank all of our colleagues at the Puerto Rico Department of Health and the CDC. Thank you, Mitch.